And welcome to this presentation. In the next 60 minutes or so, I'm going to be talking to you about building Windows 8 applications that are connected with the outside world. A little introduction of myself. So my name is Gilles Kleren. I work at Ordina, where I am doing a lot of XAML development for the last couple of years, actively working on Windows 8, WPF, and Windows Phone projects. You can find my blog, my email, and my Twitter on this slide as well. And you'll be able to download the slides and the demos of this talk from my blog later on today. This is my latest book that I've written, Silverlight 5 Data and Services Cookbook. And lots of the content that I've written about on Silverlight 5 is, of course, applicable on Windows 8. And in fact, many of the things that we'll see today are a one-on-one conversion of the things that we used to do in Silverlight and that we are now able to do directly in Windows 8 applications. So as you can see, this is the agenda. It's quite a full agenda, and I assume that we won't be making it through the entire presentation in 1 hour, at least, but we'll give it a try. So we are going to talk generally about accessing data behind a service, and then we're going to dive in some the most specific scenarios, the more traditional scenarios using WCF and ASMX services and REST services, and we'll take a stop at looking at some security issues that we have to deal with when building Windows 8 apps as well. So we're actually at the agenda, and we are going to be discussing, we're going to start by taking a look at how we can communicate with services in general, and then we'll dive in the in some applications using WCF, ASMX, and REST services. We'll also take a look at how we can integrate security when using WCF, ASMX, and REST services. We are also going to be discussing how we can communicate with OData services, WCF data services. We'll take a look at RSS feeds as well. And so those are more or less the traditional things that we also did in Silverlight applications, perhaps in WPF applications as well. After that, we are going to take a look at some more Windows 8 specific things, like transferring data in the background, doing downloads and uploads from the background. We'll take a look at how we can interact with tiles, on how tiles in fact can interact with services. We'll take a look at periodic and push notifications. I'll show you then also how we can integrate with using the web authentication broker with services such as Twitter and Facebook. And we'll do more or less the same using the Live SDK, using a single sign-on model for your Windows 8 applications. If you have time, we'll also take a look at how we can integrate roaming data in Windows 8 applications. And again, if we have time, we'll take a look at using sockets in Windows 8 apps as well. We aren't covering everything that has to do with data in Windows 8 applications. As you see, this is already quite a full agenda. And there is more in relation to services when building Windows 8 applications. We aren't covering things like the control channel trigger. We aren't covering role notifications. And in fact, we aren't talking about Windows Azure. Many of the things that we're going to be talking about using WCF and ASMX are the same in Windows Azure, but we aren't covering anything specific in Windows Azure. Let's first discuss a bit the general way of accessing data behind a service. Our Windows 8 applications, they are running on the client, and just like Silverlight applications, Windows 8 applications won't be doing direct integration or direct communication with a database. That means that all integration with a with data has to be done through a service layer. Just like in other technologies such as Windows Phone and Silverlight, this communication is done in an asynchronous way. Now, in C# 5, which we are using in Windows 8 applications, it actually became a lot simpler to do asynchronous communication. We don't have to do callbacks anymore. Using the await async pattern, we can actually develop our code or write our code more in a synchronous fashion. It's much easier to write the code, and if you have done some Silverlight, you'll probably agree that if you had to do a sequence of service calls to actually get this, then based on the result of that, get something else. It was actually quite a mess in terms of code. Now in C# 5 that we can use with Windows 8, it's much easier to do asynchronous coding. So actually getting data from a service in a Windows 8 application is a three-step process. You call the service asynchronously, doesn't matter what type of service you're going to be talking with. Then you get in the data, could be XML, could be a SOAP message, doesn't matter. And then you can use that data, for example, in a data mining scenario. And we'll do that in just a second. So as mentioned, all data, all relational data is probably going to be behind a service layer. Still, Windows 8 at this point doesn't have a built-in relational database. There is SQLite support, however, that is not the solution for every issue that we are encountering. So relational database is always to be done behind a service. Windows 8 applications have some local application storage capabilities. Most of them is around XML. But we're not going to be discussing that in this presentation. So Windows 8 applications, they can actually connect with all kinds of services, ASMX, WCF, REST, so using JSON or XML, RSS, socket services, OData services. One thing that is not supported is our beloved WCF RIA services. There is no out-of-the-box support for that technology that we got with Silverlight. So that is not something that we will be discussing in this presentation. Now, a very easy way of doing service communication is using WCF and ASMX services. So ASMX services, traditional web services, there's actually nothing different about using a an ASMX web service from a Windows 8 application than there is from any other. ASMX services can be used without any change. Of course, the communication has to be done asynchronously, and the communication is done using SOAP messages. Connecting with an ASMX web service from a Silverlight application is in fact done in a very traditional way as well. We add a service reference, then Visual Studio will generate for us a proxy, and that proxy class we can then use using the await async pattern. The latter we can do because of the fact that the proxy that will be generated is generating task-based code. And the task framework was introduced with .NET 4 and was actually carried through the .NET framework in version 4.5. And also generated proxy classes are now task-based, which means that we can use them using the await async pattern. Now let's take a look at using a public ASMX service. So for this, I'm going to use a weather service. And I hope you can see here on my screen that we are using the weather service from CDine, which is a public ASMX web service. However, before I started this webinar, it turned out that the service is down, but we'll try it anyway. So we're going to invoke that ASMX service, and I'm going to invoke it using a zip code. So I'm going to invoke the service passing in the zip code of Beverly Hills. It's only for US cities. And as you see, it takes quite a long time, which is because the service is in fact down at this point. So we're going to skip this. So you see that the service is in fact not available. That doesn't matter, we'll take a look at the code, and let me quickly enhance the font size a bit so that it's easier for you to see. Let's put it to, I think 14 should be enough. There we go. So what do we actually have here? So we have added a service reference, that is this weather service. And if we dive in that weather service reference, in this generated code, and we do a little search for task, we see that the generated code, in fact, is task-based. Of course, it's all asynchronous, so that means that we can use the await async pattern to communicate with this ASMX web service. The service itself, you can see that being invoked over here. So I'm instantiating the proxy in this very line here, and then I am using the await pattern to do the call to the service asynchronously, passing in the zip code that I entered in the text box. The result, so all the code, so this one and all the lines that I'm now selecting, they will be executed only after the asynchronous call has been finished. So that means that we are actually doing asynchronous code in a synchronous way. So the code effect looks quite synchronous. So that's all there is. As you can see, it's actually inline coding, so there's no callbacks being created here
to create this call. Now, going back to the slides, ASMX services, they're not that widely used anymore today, at least not being created. Some services are still available. So the recommended way, of course, for the service layer is WCF. Now, in terms of WCF, not everything that we have in WCF is supported to be used from a Windows 8 application. What can we use? That's the basic HTTP binding, which is in fact a binding also used for ASMX services. We can use the custom binding, so if we want to make changes to the basic HTTP binding, like for example binary encoding, we can use that custom binding for that particular case. And there's also support for NetTCP and NetHTTP binding. So that effectively means that quite a few bindings that are available in WCF are not supported to be used directly from a WCF, from a Windows 8 application. That includes WSHTTP binding, so in terms of security, we'll have to look elsewhere to find a solution to solve the security issue. You also see the binding elements that are supported. In terms of encoding, this text and binary encoding, security will cover in just a second, and you see the serializers, transfer modes. Those are the things that are supported to be used directly from a Windows 8 application. So, working with WCF services in general is more or less the same as using it from an ASMX instance in Windows 8. One thing I haven't mentioned yet is the fact that there's no configuration code being generated in the Windows 8 application. And if you think about the reason that Microsoft selected to do that, it's actually quite logical. The configuration is actually to do deployment easier, so that you don't have to rebuild and put your things that can vary inside of that configuration code. Of course, if you start deploying through a store, there's no way that you can update that configuration. So all the generated code is actually going to be generated directly in the reference.cs and not in config code. If you need to do configuration anyway, there's a partial method named configure endpoint that will be generated inside of the proxy class within the reference.cs. So there you can update your configuration as well. Task-based as well, of course, just like the ASMX services. And of course, you also need the internet capability to be enabled in the Windows 8 application. So let's take a look at another demo. It's in fact the same demo, and let's run it again. And we're now going to communicate with a WCF service. So that's what we see here. So we get in some images, and we have gotten them back. In fact, we have received from the service nothing but some URIs that we are visualizing here through some images. You see that this service is being communicated with. Let's take a look at the code. So of course I also added a this particular service reference over here, that's the image service. And inside of the WCF, accessing WCF ASMX, that's what we see here. We see that we are again instantiating a proxy, doing an asynchronous call, awaiting the result, and then we get in some image URIs. So nothing really different going on. Notice that there is no configuration code here inside of the Windows 8 class. That means that all the generated, the configuration code is in fact right over here inside of the reference.cs. And inside of this code, we also can find the configure endpoint. And that configure endpoint is a partial method that we can use from our regular Windows 8 code as well. So if we need to do configuration, we can call onto this partial method and do the configuration where we need to do it. Now, what about security? I've just mentioned that in terms of bindings, WCF is Windows 8 doesn't support the WSHTTP binding. So if we need to do authentication with a service, there's actually quite a few options that we have. So from WinRT code, we can send the credentials. That's you can see there, for example, in that sample code, I'm sending in the default Windows credentials. That, of course, needs to be specified by the service itself. And the fact that the service will then require the credentials will be reflected in the reference.cs. So it's also being generated inside of generated code in the proxy class. Now, that of course sends the credentials over the wire in clear text, which is not what we want in most cases. So we can use HTTPS, so SSL encryption on the communication, and it is also possible to use custom validation using the transport with message credential. If we use the transport with message credential in a Windows 8 application, that effectively means that we can make the service such that it will search for username password credential in the header of the sent message, and we can write some custom validation method in the service, and that will then validate if the user is allowed to make the service call. So that in combination with SSL allows us to do secure communication. From end to end, the communication is encrypted, and the service, even if it's public, will be able to do a custom validation to see if the username is allowed to do communication with that service. Let me show that very quickly. So in this project here, let me show you, I have a self-hosted WCF service and also a REST service. So the first lines of code here is actually the self-hosted WCF service. I'm going to say localhost, my happy service is going to be my endpoint on which I'm hosting. I'm using the basic binding, and I require the Windows credentials. So if we build a service reference to this service, this will result in this in the following. There we go. In here, let's do a search for Windows. There we go. This is a generated code in the service reference inside of the Windows 8 application. And this would normally be what you see in your configuration code. Now, because we don't have configuration code, this is what we'll get. We'll see that, for example, here it says that it requires the Windows credentials to be sent. So this is automatically done when I'm creating my service reference. Calling this service, and that is this particular code, is nothing different because it's going to use the default credentials. So I can quickly do that over here using, again, same lines of code to do an asynchronous call. Don't need to require my don't need to specify, let's say, the credentials being passed in, because that's done by default using the proxy class itself. All right, now let's take a look at REST communication. So REST services are very popular today as well. Many public APIs, such as Facebook, such as Twitter, they use a REST-based API. Also, many corporations or enterprises are moving to REST services because of their readable results. It's all XML or JSON. And this is, in many cases, more than enough. And also, mobile applications benefit from REST services because the response is much smaller than with a traditional SOAP message. Now, of course, Windows 8 also supports communication with a REST service. Instead of using what we used in Silverlight, the web client, we need to use the HTTP client, which also, of course, works asynchronously and is located in the system net. So that is available from the .NET profile available for Windows 8. In the HTTP client, we have methods, the get async, put async, post async, and delete async. So it's completely RESTful to be used from a Windows 8 application. The response itself is either XML or JSON. XML we can pass using a link to XML, the XML reader or the XML serializer. JSON we can use in combination with the JSON object or the data contract JSON serializer. Both options are available. The JSON object is probably the easiest one. It has quite a few methods that you can use. It has the parse method to actually parse the response. It has the get name string and the get name number, and it's also possible to do a parsing via the index rule. Now let's take a look at a sample where we are going to communicate with a REST service, and that is Flickr in this case, from a Windows 8 application. Of course, there is no reference, no service reference added for this, because it is REST. REST doesn't expose WSDL file, so it's a direct communication. We send the request from the Windows 8 application, passing in the URI, and the response, which is XML or JSON, will be passed inside of the Windows 8 app. So let's open the code for this particular sample. That's this one. What I'm going to do is I'm going to get that's a secure one. Sorry, that's the wrong one. I needed this one. It's going to be more or less the same code. So this is going to be a call to Flickr. Maybe we should run it first to see that it works. So I'm going to access REST, and we're going to search for Brussels. We're going to search on Flickr, where the internet works, there we go. We're getting in some images, as you can see here, from that REST service. Some weird things happening in Brussels, but anyway. So let's take a look at how this was done. So we're going to be using the HTTP client. When I click on that search button, I'm going to instantiate that HTTP client, and then I'm going to use the get async, passing in the UI that I want to send a request to, also passing in the API key, and in this case, of course, also the text that I want to search. This we do asynchronously, so again, we use the await pattern, and a response is an HTTP response message. That response message we can then pass by getting out the actual string, which is XML in the case of Flickr, using the response.content.read as string async, that has to be done asynchronously as well. We put that in next document, so I'm actually using link to XML here. I'm using the X document to get in the XML. Then I do some link to XML query to do the parsing of the resulting XML string coming back from Flickr, and I use that in my UI. Now the same question can be asked in combination with Flickr, or in combination with REST in general. What if you need to do authentication? You can also again use the default credentials. So sending credentials is supported for a REST service. So we can use default credentials, which will result in sending back the Windows credentials, and we do that using an HTTP client handler. That's what you see in the first sample there. We say use default credentials, which is going to be sending back the Windows credentials. We pass that handler to the HTTP client. If you need to do custom authentication using your own username password combination, you can use that handler yourself, or you can create your handler yourself, and then from that handler, you can use that in combination with an HTTP client. Let's take a look at that in action. So in my secure server, that is this one, I also created a self-hosted REST service that in this case also requires the Windows credentials to be passed on. So this is going to be usable through that same thing as I just mentioned, using that use default credentials. In this case, we use the web HTTP binding on the server side, and we ask that the clients would return their Windows credentials. And if we communicate with that service, that is this one, from a Windows 8 application, of course, we again use that HTTP client, but in this case, we are creating that HTTP client handler, and to that handler, we say, please use the default credentials, which is going to result in the in passing in the Windows credentials to the handler, and then we pass that handler to the HTTP client, and from then on, it is possible to make the call asynchronously to that service. All right, so I'm going to run this because there's nothing really exciting to see here. So I'm going to shut this demo down, there we go, and let's move on to OData. Now OData is actually a protocol that is used in combination a lot with WCF data services. It's actually the open data protocol, and is based around two things. It's based on the URI that we send the request to. We get a response back in XML, so more or less the same as what we have in REST. In OData, we actually, in many cases, expose the model to be it to have it queried using a syntax based on URIs. So the result is in fact an XML, and it's in fact formatted as AtomPub. So based on AtomPub and HTTP, we can expose a model and allow it to be queried from Windows 8 applications. It's a very open protocol. It means it is also usable for many other technologies. It's not tied to Windows or .NET in general. Let me give you a few samples. And for this, Netflix is a very good example. Netflix, you may not know, it's actually a movie viewing service they have in the US. And they have their entire catalog open over an OData service. So via odata.netflix.com/catalog, we get access to that open OData endpoint. And as you can see, using queries, we can actually query that OData endpoint. So we see here, for example, we say on the catalog, get me all the genres, and it's going to return a list of all the genres. And let's take a look at that very quickly. So if I do this in the browser, here we go. So there we see, I hope it's readable, we get actually an overview of all the genres that are defined by Netflix. And as you can see, they have quite many, many genres available in their catalog. And using that very same syntax, we can actually dive in the model deeper. So for example, we can ask it to return all adventures, give back the name, give only back the value in that last case there. And we can also start doing navigation. For here you see, for example, give me all the genres, give me the genre adventures and give me from that the titles and so on and so forth. We can do a count. We can even do querying. Give me, for example, all the titles that have an average rating greater than 4. We can do sorting and so on and so forth. So that is all about OData. Now, OData is supported in Windows 8 as well. There is an OData client library available in for Windows 8 applications. It used to be quite annoying to work with. So before Windows 8 went RTM, there was no real add reference support for OData. Now it is there. You can still use the method that we had to use then, so the data SVC util. It's more or less the same as the regular SVC util you use for WCF services. The data SVC util is in fact the way to make a proxy based on OData endpoint. So we can work with OData services from Windows 8 applications using that client library. And using that client library, it becomes very easy to work with an OData endpoint. In fact, what you need to do is just write a link query that will be translated for you in a query, a URI-based query, and the result, which is XML, will be materialized, let's say, in regular objects. So in fact, you don't come in contact with either the atom pub response or the building up of the query. Let me show you that. So I'm going to show you a sample in which we are going to use the OData endpoint from Netflix. So let's try it. There we go, running a sample, hitting a few breakpoints, as we'll take a look at in just a second. So I'm going to ask it for a number of genres. And that's what we see here. So in this case, I have a few very exotic genres here. So let's take sci-fi horror movies, and then it's gonna go in that genre as well. So you see here some weird titles being returned from Netflix. So we can do that, but as I mentioned, you're not gonna see URIs being generated, nor are you gonna see XML being parsed. So let's take a look at what we then have. So when we work with OData, one thing we need to do is add a few references. So in this case, I need to add a reference for the OData client library, which is a separate install. It doesn't come with Windows 8 by default. So it's a separate library you have to install on the system before you can actually use it from Visual Studio. Then you make a reference to the OData Windows Store and the Data Services Client Windows Store. From then on, your application is capable of talking with an OData endpoint. Now let's take a look at what we were doing in that main page. Let's run it again. And then we'll hit the breakpoints anyway. So here we go. So I'm going to load in the genres. And so the loading of the genres is, of course, being done asynchronously. So what I'm going to do is, let's hit that breakpoint. So I'm going to communicate with a context. That is this one. Now, the generated context is built up when I am actually building up my service reference. So there's a service reference generated as well. If you are doing it via the service reference, in this case, I use the data SVC util, and I have my, over here, this is my own data service context. It's the same thing as you do with the service reference. So this is my client-side context that I'm going to be talking with. I pass in, of course, the URI I need to talk with. And on that context, I have access over the genres, over all the titles and stuff like that. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to say context.genres, write me a regular link query, in fact. I'm going to say, give me all the genres where the name contains sci-fi, take the first 50. Do that asynchronously. You don't see that happening in this case. So what I'm going to do now, I have not done any communication with the OData endpoint yet. At this point, I built up the query. So I write a link query, and that's going to be translated in the query that you see there. I hope it's readable. Let's zoom in. And so what I'm doing here is I'm doing, the OData client library for me is building up that query. That's what you see over here. So I don't have to write that query myself. Now I'm going to do the asynchronous call to Netflix. You saw that happening. And for all the genres that I got back, I'm going to do another call to get in some images and stuff like that. So the result, in fact, is, in this case, objects, materialized objects that are also generated when I created that client-side context. So it's more or less the same thing as we do with the regular service. We don't have to write the types ourselves. They are transferred to the client to be used to the client directly. And so no atom parsing, no XML parsing needs to be done. It's done automatically for us by the OData client line. Okay, so OData works from Windows 8 without any issue, as you can see. Let's take a look at RSS. So we all know RSS feeds. RSS stands for Real Simple Syndication, and an RSS feed is in fact nothing more than some XML. Now, that XML is in fact in a fixed format. It has a post, it has a title, it has an author and stuff like that. It's a list of feed items that are being returned by an RSS feed. This is actually XML that we can parse ourselves. However, it's much easier to do it through a third-party library, or why not use the built-in parsing of syndication of RSS feeds. This is of course the way that regular RSS readers do it, because if RSS was not formatted the same for all RSS feeds, no one would actually be able to parse it. See, there's something weird going on with my slide here that I missed. So in WinRT, we have the windows.web.syndication. This is actually the same thing as we have in .NET in the system service model, where we also have some syndication clauses, the syndication feed and the syndication client. They allow us to, the syndication client actually allows us to call onto an asynchronous, to a feed asynchronously and return that result in a syndication feed. That syndication feed then has an items collection which allows us to get all the individual posts and do parsing on them. So we don't have to do the parsing ourselves. It is done, it is automatically done behind the scenes through the syndication feed and the syndication client classes. They actually have an object model built around the RSS feed. Of course, all this communication is done asynchronously as well. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to call onto an RSS feed, and let's take this one. I'm going to call onto an RSS feed. I'm going to parse it. So I'm going to use the feed of tweakers.net, a Dutch technology website. I'm going to call onto that feed. It's downloading the feed. Here we go. And as you can see here, we actually have a very simple implementation of an RSS reader built up. So these are the titles for any of the title of the post. In fact, I have a title, I have a link, I have the actual content of the article. And it is possible with RSS to pass in some specific custom fields, and they are returned in a collection that I'm visualizing here at the very right bottom. Let's go back to the code, and so everything is evolving around the syndication feed and the syndication client classes. So I'm building up that syndication client right over here. So I say initiate me new syndication client, and I then get in the URI that I want to get the feeds from, and then I say to that syndication client, please get me all the feeds based on that URI. Of course, asynchronously, through the wait pattern, that gives a syndication feed. And that syndication feed I can then use to, I can actually take a look at the items collection that has a list of posts, and all those posts have a header and a title and stuff like that. So let's take a look at parsing that feed. So this is the items collection I was talking about. It's a list of syndication items. And if we take a look at the parsing of that very feed, so that's the feed title, so that's the feed itself, and then I'm going to loop through the collection, and I'm going to show a feed entry. So each item in the RSS feed gets parsed into a syndication item object, and that syndication item has a title, it has a collection of links, can have a collection of links. It can also have the ones that you saw at the bottom right, those extensions. They are also retrieved in the collection, the item element extensions. And then it can have a content and a summary. And that is what we use as the very content or the body of the RSS item. And so you see that we are simply parsing. We don't have to do the parsing ourselves. That is done via WinRT, via the syndication feed and the syndication classes. They are actually building an object model around the RSS feed that we pass it. So building an RSS reader in Windows 8 is very simple. Windows 8 has the classes built in. No need to get third-party library for that. Let's take a look at some more Windows 8 specific topics where we are integrating with the web and with services as well. And we'll start by looking at background transfers in Windows 8 applications. Now, because of the way that Windows 8 applications are actually being executed, only one application can run at any given point in time. There is an exception, of course, when you do two applications, when you have one application in SnapView, but the default is only one application that can run at any given point in time. Now, this of course brings a few places where it's actually difficult to build a regular application. One of those is downloading stuff within a Windows 8 app. It's not easy to force the user to stay within your application while he's downloading something. It might not be the most exciting thing to watch a file download. So would the user switch away, the application would be suspended, and therefore also the download would be suspended, because when suspended, we don't have any access to the CPU, to memory, or to the network anymore. So that's why Microsoft actually had or has built into Windows a separate API to do downloads, and that's the background transfer and the background downloader clause. So in the Windows networking background transfer, that's namespace, we have the background downloader, which actually allows us to create download operations. And those download operations are hosted in a separate process that is called the background transfer transfer host. It's actually instantiating a new instance of this background transfer host, allowing us to do the download in a separate process. And that process is not going to be suspended when the main application gets suspended. The background transfer host supports credentials, it supports progress reporting, so while the application is the foreground app, it is possible to send feedback on the progress of the download from the background transfer host to the main running application. So this way we actually go around an issue. It is possible to do a download directly in the application, for example using the HTTP client, but if you want to make sure that the download doesn't get interrupted when the application is not a foreground application, you should be looking at the background transfers API in Windows 8. And let's also do that by taking a look at a sample. I'm going to use a sample from the Windows 8 SDK in this case. Let's first download the or start the application. I'm going to download a file, and I'm going to use the Big Bug Bunny movie. There we go. And so for the download, I'm going to use this one. We're going to copy the link. It's actually quite a large file, so you see, otherwise we may not see the download happening. So there we go. So I'm gonna paste it in this AVI. Go. I'm gonna start the download. So now I'm actually starting a separate process. So if the download is actually starting, there we go. It has to wait a few seconds. So there we go. It's actually downloading that file now for me, as you can see. And the download is effectively running, and it's already at 1%. If we go to the desktop and let's take a look at the task manager. In the task manager, let's click on the name here. This particular separate process, that is actually the background transfer host, because if we go to details, you see that we are actually using the background transfer host.executable, which is making the download for me. And I'm running this application from Visual Studio, so it won't be suspended automatically. But even if I suspend the application, which it would be now if I run it as a regular application, this is actually not going to be suspended. The download can continue while the application is in suspended mode. And so this background transfer host will put the file wherever you started the download, even if you put it in local, so in the roaming data, if you put it in local data, or if you put it in one of the directories that Windows 8 has application has access to, like the known folders APIs or the My Documents, it all works with all those files as well. So let's kill this, and I'm actually going to stop the download because otherwise it's going to slow down the network. So let's take a look at how we can build this. It's really not that difficult to make or to start the download. And I'm going to search for the background. Oops, that was not it. Background downloader. There we go. So when we click on that start download, we ask or we use the URI that the user has entered in this particular case, and that's the file that we're going to download. Then we specify where the file needs to go. In this case, we are going to put it in the pictures library, which is a value of the known folders enumeration, and then we're going to create the file asynchronously. And so based on the destination, we're actually creating a storage file. Then we instantiate the background downloader, and the background downloader is a class available in the Windows Networking Background Transfer namespace. And there we are going to instantiate that downloader, and then I'm going to say, downloader, please create me that download using passing in the URI and passing in where the file needs to go. This has not started the download yet, so that I'm going to do in this handle download async. So inside of that handle download async, I'm going to say, please download that file using the download operation dot start async. I use the extension method sTask here, and I pass in two things. The second parameter is this progress callback that's actually to be used, it's going to be used to update the UI about the progress of the download. And the first parameter is actually a cancellation token source. And the cancellation token source, let's take a look at this at its definition, that's the one you see over here, is actually a token that you pass to a download, making it possible to cancel it. So when we start a download, we associate it with the cancellation token source. And then when we say cancel, I'm going to say every download that is associated with that cancellation token source needs to be cancelled. That's what we see here in cbs.cancel. And then we create a new instantiation of that cancellation token source. That way it is possible to asynchronously cancel the downloads happening from the application UI. All right, so the background transfers are actually an application that or an API that Microsoft built into Windows in WinRT to make it possible to still have the application do stuff while it is suspended. And the same goes actually for tiles. I think by now everyone knows what a tile is. A tile is actually an extension of the application running on the start screen and giving the user the impression that the application is still doing stuff. Now there's several ways of updating the tile that is local, so from the application's code, that is possible for possible to use in some scenarios, but not in every scenario. For example, it's a good idea, for example, to use the local tile API to update, for example, the tile when you're building e-reader, a book reader application. And every time that user turns a page, update the tile. That's a perfect scenario. However, not every scenario is covered using the using updates, tile updates from the local code. Imagine that you're building a weather application. A weather tile should always give information about the current weather and not about the weather that we had when the user was using the application the last time. So we need to be able to update the tile asynchronously while the application is not running. And there's two ways of doing that, using periodic updates and using push notifications. And we're going to take a look at these two integrations with services from Windows 8 perspective. So let's first take a look at a periodic tile update. Now, what is a periodic tile update? A periodic tile update, like the word says it, is actually a schedule on the tile itself, where Windows will actually make a call to a service every now and then and download the XML from that service and then show the updated XML. The XML that we are going to return is the same template XML as we have regularly in Windows 8 to update the tile. So it's the same tile XML that we need to get back from the service. It should not be a SOAP message containing XML. It should be a real XML string that is being returned by a service. This is an easy way to create updates with a large audience. It's a very simple way, and it's in fact based on a polling system, because Windows will actually call onto that XML endpoint, on that service endpoint, asking to get some updates every now and then. So how do you go about building this? Well, you build you start by building a service that returns an XML string. And then you build your Windows 8 application so that it will actually do a periodic polling using the tile update of start periodic update. And at start periodic update, you pass a recurrence that can be half an hour, 4 hours, and a day, if I'm not mistaken. It might be one more. It's basically an enumeration. So it's not possible to say every 37 minutes I want to do an update. That won't work. You have to follow one of the values that are available in that enumeration. So it is a system that is poll-based, so it doesn't work for pushing. That means that the information can be out of date. So for example, if the service would not be reachable because the device is offline, or the service is offline, Windows will do the polling in the next occurrence of the interval. It doesn't support queuing of tile updates, so it's not possible to do five different polls to five different service endpoints and queue those. It's only possible to get one XML and show that particular XML in the tile. And it also won't work for breaking new scenarios, because it's not a push scenario. It's not going to be working for push scenarios. Breaking news is something that won't be working with periodic tile updates. If you need that, we need push notifications, because in this case, in the interval that between two polls, there might be something happening, so we don't get notified about that. A weather application is a perfect fit for this type of polling to a service endpoint to show the current weather. And let's take a look at periodic updates. So let's run the application. So in this case, this is a service that I'm going to talk with. And in this case, I can also, in this drop-down here, I can specify how many times there should be a poll. So that is managed entirely by Windows. We don't have to do anything for that. So these are the options that we have in the enumeration: half an hour, 6, 12, and once a day. So when I say start polling every half an hour, so now every half an hour, a poll is being done on that XML service. And so if you take a look, it should be somewhere over here. As you can see, I've done quite some playing with this. It is in effect somewhere over here. There we go. So the service returns hello world. And so you see that that hello world is shown in this tile here as well. Now, how do we create this? Well, it's in fact very simple to do. Let's open the code for this one. So the service itself returns XML, and that's the same template XML. And in the when we click on the start polling button, we use the we first specify when we want to do the poll. So that's using the periodic update recurrence enumeration. The user selects one of those, and then we use the tile update manager, create tile updater for application. And then we say start periodic update on that URI and using this recurrence. And from then on, it's completely out of our hands. Windows will do the polling for us. Now, as mentioned, we can't cover every scenario with this. It is not possible to do breaking news through this type of tile updates. For that specific scenario, we need to use push notifications. And so push notifications, they enable us to bring updates as soon as they happen on the server side. Now, push notifications actually work based on a system of or based on WNS, so the Windows Notification Service, which allows to deliver those same XML messages over the wire without the client actually making the call for that. It's actually the backend and the service effect that make the call to the clients that are interested in receiving those updates. It's very transparent for the end user, for the developer. The developer actually doesn't have to build all kinds of logic to find the devices and update them. It is all very transparent for the developer. And it's also free, which makes it very easy to build a service that returns millions or talks with millions of connected devices. It's completely free for us as developers to use. You need to register your application. You can do that via manage.dev.live.com/build. Now let's take a look at how this thing actually works. So this is the architecture, and the orange parts, those are the parts that we are building. The blue parts are actually all already built by Microsoft. So assume that we're building a... something starts beeping here, okay. Assume that we are building a Windows 8 application that communicates or that wants to get in breaking news updates. And let's say that we're building a CNN application or any news application, and we need to be notified about breaking news changes. So the first thing that the application will do, it will connect or it will call on the client side notification client platform. And that will return a so-called channel URI, which is in fact nothing more than a permission slip that is actually the Windows operating system saying to the Metro application, yes, you can, you're now registered to receive updates from the Windows Notification Service, and this is in fact your unique identification. It's a URI, it's called a channel URI. That is available inside of the Windows 8 application, and somehow we need to transfer that to a service that we are writing, the cloud service, which we can certainly host in Windows Azure. So we host the, we transfer the URI to that cloud service. We save it somewhere over there in a database. And all the clients that actually need to be connected are doing the same thing. So on the server side, we end up with a list of channel URIs. In the backend, something may happen. And at that point, the backend sends an update to the cloud service, which is then responsible to loop over all the connected clients or the client channel URIs and send a push notification to all of these. Now that goes through Windows Notification Service. So in fact, we are connecting to Windows Notification Service, which is a cloud service, an Azure-based service by Microsoft, which will in turn search a device basically, transfer that XML message to the notification client platform, and it is the responsibility of Windows itself to show the update in the tile of the application that made or that was connected with the update. So Windows is actually doing all that for you. It's very transparent to be used from a Windows 8, from a Windows 8 perspective, from a developer. So as mentioned, it's actually a good choice to make to use Windows Azure for this. We need some way to transfer to post those URIs to. We can do that with a Windows Azure-based service, so Windows Azure Compute. We can put a wrapper on there. Put in WCF service over there, and then for the storage of all the channel URIs, we can use table storage, we can use blob storage. So using an end-to-end Azure scenario for this is a very good choice. Let's take a look at using this in a sample. So that is this one, push notifications. So in the Silverlight, in the Windows 8 application, we are going to be sending a URI to a service. In this case, I am going to be playing the role of the service as well as the client, as well as the backend. So let's first do step one of that graph we had there, and let's make the call to that notification client platform. There we go. So that is that unique URI. I'm going to copy that. Shut down the Windows 8 application. There we go. So now, in fact, when the application gets in an XML from the service, it is going to be updating. In this case, we're going to send a toast message, but we can do the same with the tile update. So I'm passing in this URI here, which is the URI that's a channel URI. So that is, in fact, the permission that is going to be sent over to the service. And there on the service, we're actually going to be storing that in the database, something now happens in the back in the backend, and now we need to loop over all the registered channel URIs. When you register your application on manage.dev.live.com/build, you get a client secret and an SID. You need to use those on the server side as well. I'm showing them here. There's nothing really special going on here. And then we're going to send a message. And in this case, let's use a toast message. That's the easiest one to see. So if all goes well, I should now be able, oops, there we go, to connect with Windows Azure. I hope that works from within the Microsoft. There we go. So you see that a toast message now coming in. The Windows 8 application that we used for this was not running anymore, but when I click it, I'm using a trace, and I'm going to trace the application, and there we go again into the application. So let's take a look at the code for this. Let's first take a look at the Windows 8 app. On the Windows 8 site, it's very easy. There's only one call that we need to do, in fact. We use the Windows Networking Push Notifications, Push Notification Channel Manager, Create Push Notification Channel for Application Async. So it's a very long method name to do something very simple, which is, in fact, this step one here. So here we did the communication between the Windows 8 app and notification client platform. After that, we are doing step two, which is sending over this to this channel URI to a cloud service, store it somewhere, and then something happens in the backend, and that is going to do looping over this list of channel URIs it has here, and post this message to Windows Notification Service. And that is what happens in the second project over here. So first, we need to do some authentication, which is based on that SID and that client secret. I'm not going to show you all the code for this. It's quite annoying to show you all this code. It's the same code. It's available on MSDN as well, so it's very easy to see what's going on. First, we do an authentication. We get back an OAuth token, and that OAuth token is then used to send the message to the clients. So in this case, when we send send toast put notification, I'm going to use I'm going to build up that same XML once more. So you see that it's the same XML that I can use for a periodic and for a local tile API, tile update as well, always the same XML. Then we're going to do a request to the URI. So that is going to be the URI passed by the client, so that's a channel URI. We do a post of XML, and we add some specific headers, also passing in the token. And then, using these lines, we write the XML to the request string, and we get back a response from the Windows Notification Service. Notice that this is an information about whether or not the information was available or was successfully delivered on the client side. So you get feedback from that as well. All right. I think we have time for one more thing. Yeah, Anthony, we have a couple of minutes left. So you're not done with me yet, so let's take a look at what do we still have here. We'll take a look at Facebook and Twitter and Live SDK, and then we'll finish off. So the next thing I want to show you is how we can integrate with services such as Twitter and Facebook, and we can do that using a class called the Web Authentication Broker. Now, previously, when we needed to communicate with a public service such as Facebook, such as Twitter, it was often very cumbersome to do. In many cases, we had to ask the user for its credentials, username and password, and pass those on to the API. Now, most services, like Twitter, like Facebook, like Flickr, they moved on to OAuth authentication, so OAuth. And in that case, it's much easier to make a general solution for this. Now, in Windows 8, that solution is available through the Web Authentication Broker class, which gives us a very unified way of interacting with public services. And that is, in fact, very simple to use, and always, for the user, a very safe environment to know what is actually happening. So you see behind the overlay here that we have the calling application, and that calling application is calling onto the Web Authentication Broker to do an authentication. Now, at no point in time will the application itself get access to the credentials. It is, in fact, a separate application domain that gets hosted by the web authentication broker. There's a dialog area. And in that dialog area, there is a web page being hosted, and that is the page where we need to do the authentication. So that is hosted by, for example, Flickr or Facebook. User logs in over there, and the calling application gets back a token, which is then, in fact, the authentication for this particular application to use that service for this particular user. And that way, the application, the developer, doesn't need to worry about storing those credentials. It is only getting back a token that is going to be linked to this user and this service. So it's much safer. It's much less trouble for the developer who has to build it, because he doesn't have to worry where he needs to store those credentials securely. And also for the end user, it knows that his credentials are automatically entered on the website that he needs to authenticate with, and don't have to go through the application, which might do bad things with those credentials anyway. So this is the process that you see happening here. Right? This is in fact, the web authentication is a set of some APIs, a broker and a web host. So your application will communicate with the API to instantiate, to communicate with the broker instead. And so the broker sits between your application and another application container that is showing the web host where the authentication page is going to be shown in. And it does the actual communication between your application container and the new authentication or the web authentication host hosted in a separate application container. This way, the credentials are not available in application container one, but only in application container two. And the broker will make sure that the authentication token is returned from app container two to app container one, and that is your application. So we're going to do that by authenticating with Facebook. That is this one. Let's take a look at Facebook. Let's run the application. I'm gonna use some credentials over here. There we go. So I am going to use this callback URI, and I'm going to use this application ID. And so now I'm going to try to authenticate with Facebook. So what you see happening now is that overlay happening, then the web authentication host, and then I can authenticate with Facebook. There we go, should be okay now. Then log in. And when I'm logged in, my application itself gets back the access token, which it can then store, for example, in the password vault. Right? It has a timeout on when it will expire. Let's take a look at the code for this. And you'll see that this is a very simple process to do that authentication. Compared to what you would have to do normally, most of it is handled by the web authentication broker. So we need to specify the URI that we want to authenticate with, that is this one, that's defined by the service, in this case Facebook. And then we use the web authentication broker to authenticate async. We say where we need to do the authentication and also what is going to be the callback. This results in a web authentication result, which in the case of success, in its web authentication result.response data, has in this case the authentication token with it. And that token needs to be parsed out, and we can store that, as mentioned, for example, in the password vault. And last thing I'm going to show you is doing more or less the same using the Live SDK. So the Live SDK in Windows 8 is, again, a separate download that you can get from the dev.windows.com website. And in that, using that Live SDK, you can actually do a single sign-on with the Live credentials in the WinRT application. Making it possible to integrate with Live, integrate with SkyDrive, integrate with stuff like Outlook.com, Messenger, and all those things. You need the Live SDK version 5. You need to register your application, again, with manage.dev.live.com/build. And of course, only those things only work when the user is logged into the system with a Microsoft account. This, of course, needs to be trusted, which you see here in this case was not done yet. And when the user is logged in with a Live ID, it is actually possible to yeah, then it's only possible to buy stuff in the in the store as well. So to do live SDK integration, your user is required to be using the live ID as the way of signing into the machine, not a local account. And once we are logged in, everything is evolving around some controls in the live SDK. And the important thing here is the sign in button. And a sign in button is actually something that where we can sign in, call again an overlay which will allow us to do signing with live. We need to pass on to the sign in button which are the permissions, and it's called scopes in live, we are going to use. In this case, we are going to use sign in, contacts, create, and basic. And basic is in fact the basic profile info. Sign in is the one that you'll need if you want to do single sign in with live. And also you can, for example, integrate with SkyDrive. It is possible to integrate with SkyDrive from your Windows 8 application. You can browse through the folders, take a look at the pictures that the user has in his live, in this SkyDrive folder. Well, let's take a look to finish off this webinar at that sample. And we're going to take a look at accessing the folders with pictures within my SkyDrive. So I'm going to hit a few breakpoints. I'm going to skip through those. There we go. It's authenticating now with SkyDrive. Hitting quite a few breakpoints. There we go. And now I've actually, after a few seconds of time, there we go. We see some images popping up that I have in my SkyDrive on this for this live ID. So let's take a look at how we can do this. The best thing I'm going to do is run it again, and then we're going to hit the breakpoints. That's not what we need. Let's first show you the XAML, and that is, I think it's this one. So the live sign in button I'm looking for, that's not the one I'm looking for. Sign in button, weird, I lost my sign in button anyway. Sorry for that, I lost my sign in button. So we are doing the sign in automatically, and then we get a so-called live connect session that we're going to store on the application level. Now we do the authentication, there we go, the user is now logged in, we have a live connect session, again, based on an access token, so more or less the same thing as what happens with the web authentication broker. And now we're going to load in the data. Loading in the data is not that easy using the live SDK, because it's all evolving around some dynamic code, as you can see here. So we use the live connect client, based on the session, the live connect session that was created automatically using the live SDK. And on that client, we then say, get async my albums through the /albums. And it gives results for me in a live operation result. And on that live operation result, which I name your album operation result, I ask the result. And that's give me back a dynamic. And then it starts getting very complicated to do all the parsing. So that's a bit of the downside of the live SDK. You need, as you see here, some dynamics to do the call and get back to live. It is available, or this is information available on live SDK pages, but again, it's not that easy to do the actual parsing and actual finding of all the information you need. So it all revolves around these so-called queries, let's say, and to do parsing of the information on the live, in this case, the SkyDrive. And then we get in the results, there we go. So I think we're out of time here, I think, Anthony, yeah. So as we saw in this webinar, so Windows 8 can connect with many services. There's in fact almost no limitation to what services we can connect, which is a good thing, making it possible to build Windows 8 applications that integrate with an existing service layer. WCF, ASMX, OData, they all work in a way that's very similar to what we had in Silverlight. One thing that has changed is, of course, it's much easier now to do asynchronous development, using an async await pattern. It's also possible to secure that communication. You also saw that using the Web Authentication Broker and the Live SDK, it's much easier to integrate with existing web APIs such as Facebook, such as Live.